Hello and welcome. I'm your host, Mark Gaberti, and this is the podcast for entrepreneurs who are looking for the breakthrough for their businesses. Self-publishing allows anyone with an idea to publish their own book. While more people are becoming authors and striking their fortunes, more people want to figure out how to dominate the self-publishing space. And in this episode, you will learn exactly how to grow your very own self-publishing brand. Today's guest teaches people how to grow their own profitable self-publishing businesses. He is a certified personal trainer, best-selling author, and self-published author of well over 40 books. Think about that, 40 books. That's incredible. So today's guest provides a wide range of educational videos as well, in addition to over 40 books. And these videos focus on self-publishing, and you can find them over on his YouTube channel, which we'll mention soon, because if we mention it, we give away the guest. But today's guest for episode 128 of the Breakthrough Success Podcast is none other than Dale Roberts. Dale, it is such a pleasure to have you on the show.
Hey, thanks, man. I'm pretty jacked. Dude, it's almost like it, you know, I'm sorry, this is probably completely off your script and it's going to throw everything off. But I got to listen to some of your things on iTunes, and anybody's listening to this and you haven't rated his podcast, please do that. But the thing is I talk to him and he's completely chill before we get on. And then as soon as he presses the record, that guy, he's on. Energy just goes up. So I'm pretty pumped to be on here and actually to be featured on your show because, wow, 128 episodes, I commend you. That is a lot of hard work and tons of hours. And the guests that you have me sharing space with, I'm 100% honored. And thank you for having me on the show.
Dale, it is such a pleasure to have you on the show, and I really can't wait to dive into the self-publishing space from someone who's written all these books, taught so many people on how to do it. But before we go into self-publishing, I'd love to get some backstory. So why did you first become a self-published author? What first attracted you to that space?
You know, it's crazy. I get this question a lot on podcasts, video interviews, and so forth, and a lot of people, I try to give it in a different way and tell you a different story, but it's going to be the same story no matter how I try to spin it. It literally is. I was always interested in reading and writing since I was a little boy. In fact, I went to college. I'm a college dropout. Hello. I went to Bowling Green State University for journalism because I was going to eventually one day write my own fiction books. And also I was really aiming to work for Guitar World magazine as a journalist because I love to play guitar. I love to read. So this was all great. But naturally, I just didn't have the focus to stay in college. I felt like, I'm better than this. I can do better. And I decided to pretty much pursue a career in the healthcare industry. I was in it for about 20 years and became very good at it. In fact, moved up to a semi-corporate position in a privately owned nonprofit company. And I was able to mentor people. And that was where I met my wellness coach. Now, the wellness coach was assigned to everybody at my specific employers. And I'm trying not to throw my employers out. Forgive me if I don't do that. But the wellness coaches were just pretty much there to, you know, kind of encourage you, get you to live a good, healthy lifestyle. Well, the issue that my wellness coach ran into was I was a hard nut to crack. I could eat really well. She could get me to go to a regimented diet. I could work out. I could, you know, it got to the point where it got ridiculous. I was doing 2,000 squats straight without any rest. I was doing just ridiculous things. And it just, eventually she's like, what can I do? And one day we're talking on the phone and she's like, you have a lot of knowledge in personal training and fitness. Why don't you write a book? And I kind of did, what we're going to do that. We're going to write a book. And it became something instead of saying someday. And I think you probably can relate to that, or at least have heard people say that someday I'm going to vacation in Hawaii. Someday I'm going to build a raft. Someday I'm going to write a book was my credo for so long. And finally I was challenged. And see, I'm the type of person that when somebody challenges me and I agree to that challenge, I'm just laser focused. I have to do it. I have to annihilate it. So I sat down, actually got up 2 hours early every day, 4 a.m. So that way, before my wife was even awake, I would sit down, pound out my first book. I didn't know what I was doing. It was a real mess. And as my good boy and mutual friend, Rob Archangel, puts it, your first book is always your worst book. Oh, my Lord.
Yes.
My first book, you couldn't put lipstick on that pig and make it look pretty. it was bad. But I tell you, when I was done with it, I was proud of it. I self-published it through the CreateSpace platform. I didn't realize how accessible Kindle was. I heard about it, but it was one of those cases where I found CreateSpace just because it was just the best solution and it came up on a quick search. That's just really the simple answer to it. It wasn't like I was like, let me check out Lulu or let me look over into Digipod or any of these other print-on-demand style services. I just CreateSpace. Boom. All right, great. I went ahead and published it on there. And here's the best part. Brace yourself. I made a whopping $20 my first month. And I was like, you know what? Screw this job. I'm going to pursue a writing career. I'm going to become a self-published author. I'm going to produce more of these books and I'm going to support myself on it. Well, nobody told me that actually you have to do more work than that. So you fast forward some time later when I actually became very coachable. I hired a coach and a mentor. I purchased numerous courses on self-publishing. I lived it, breathed it, ate it, slept it. And eventually it brought me to the point where I am at now, to where it's just, I enjoy it so much and I'm so passionate about it that I want to share it with other people and get it to where they're not having to eat ramen noodles and frozen vegetables for 2 years straight so they can become a self-published author or support their family with the earnings that they make from that part-time or full-time.
And it's interesting hearing about your story that you committed all out on this thing. And there are some people who say keep the job a little bit before committing to something like this. There are others who have the different philosophy. It depends on definitely what works for you. And I've had guests talk about self-publishing before, but I'd like to focus more on the marketing side. And you've written over 40 books, but that doesn't mean you've written 40 books. It also means you've marketed over 40 books. So you know a lot more about that than most of us do. So what's the game plan for marketing the books we publish? Because from what I understand, that's 30% of the work writing the book, but then 70% towards marketing.
Man, you have probably that's on a best case scenario. Sometimes to me, I feel like every now and then 10% of the process is writing the book and like 90% is marketing and promoting it, because you got to get out there. And as my good boy William May usually says, you got to get belly to belly and eyeball to eyeball in order to really build a connection with the people that you want as your ideal audience. Yeah, we could hide behind our computers and we can tip tap away and we can run ads through Facebook or Amazon marketing service. But to me, I think the real connection that you make is person to person. So for instance, just before you and I got on, we kind of jib jab for a little bit. It feels a little bit more, we're flowing a little better, we're getting along a little better. So to me, that's probably one of the best ideas for marketing. And there's sometimes, and I find most instances, not all the time, most people that are jumping into self-publishing are looking at it as an avenue to bring in some type of part-time or full-time income, and they're cash-strapped. They're not going to be necessarily going, well, you know, I've got $10,000 to spare. Let's go ahead and hire a ghostwriter and a professional editor, and we'll get this book on out there. So I always try to find the best solutions for people's marketing needs. And so there's one way that I'm going to go ahead. I segued kind of easily. See that? That was a smooth transition. We were right over into one marketing technique, which is getting out and actually meeting people where they're at. That is so cheap. It's simple. Here's a great one for you. This doesn't cost a dime. You call your local library, you get a hold of them, and get in touch with somebody in management and find out if you can be able to host either A, an author appearance, B, an author reading, C, if you have a kid's book, that's even better. You can be able to say, okay, I've got a kid's book and I'm going to donate so many books to your library if you allow me to sit down and organize an event with you. And you'd be amazed, because library, first of all, A, loves free things. B, they love to have events that they can bring the community in. So there's one method that you can use. The next one is going to be even simpler. Have you ever heard of meetup.com?
Yes.
Meetup.com, I'm telling you, I've met some of my best friends through meetup.com. And it's really led to awesome opportunities for me not only as a self-published author, but also as the video content creator that I am now. So meetup.com is just one example. Let me explain it to you, even though you kind of know it, but for your listeners' sakes, Meetup is essentially a networking platform. You don't have to pay a dime for it unless you want to put together your own networking meeting. But there's so many that are available on meetup.com that you literally have your choice. You can go to an author's group. You can, let's say, for instance, that you're into meditation. You can find a meditation meetup group. And here's the beauty of it. Let's just say you don't have meetup in your area. Hello, we've got social media and Facebook. You can be able to connect with other people like yourself through social media itself. And that's where I'm going to segue in from something like a meetup into social media and how that is another way that you can meet. Now, this is where I challenge you that instead of just getting behind the keyboard and just, you know, typing it out, do things like this to where you say, you break ground with somebody, you start to meet them on social media. What I would recommend is find some way that you can have a common ground. And then from there, build that bridge even further through things like video chats. I can't tell you how awesome video chats are. I've met some of the awesomest people like Rob Archangel, for instance. Let's go ahead and go back to Rob. Rob and I connected through my channel, thankfully. And we just kind of were emailing each other back and forth until finally I was like, look, I think it's about time that we get on video chat. And you know, here's the beauty of it. People will read something and they will kind of hear and they'll assume certain feelings that you have. And that's great. You can communicate a great message through text. Awesome. But here's the even better part is we can get on the phone and people are able to emote and express themselves even better. And so that form of communication gets a better relationship. It gets a better builder of relationships. But here's an even cooler part, because I could sit here and give you anecdotal evidence about, you know, body language makes up 83.2% of all communication. But let's face it, it's easier to read somebody. So for instance, as we're sitting here chatting via our video chat here and Mark's recording things, I'm able to kind of read him. I see him smiling. He's nodding his head. We're able to kind of read each other, and he can tell when I'm probably starting to wrap up a point. So I'm starting to go down this little path here, and there's a good reason, because we started to hear at social media or something like a meetup, and we start to build, you know, like a staircase. We're going up, we start to talk to this person via social media, we communicate with them, maybe we get on a phone call, and then we come up to a video chat, and we start to build this relationship. Remember this, though, here, folks. One of the worst things you can do is be that weird guy. Don't be that weird guy. You know what I'm talking about, Mark, right? Have you ever been, you've met that one guy who's got like an MLM company and he's just like, you got to try out my product. It's going to change your life and it's going to make you $30 in the next 24 hours. And you're kind of like, whoa. I didn't even catch your name and you're already trying to sell me your wares? So don't be that weird guy. Whenever I go into networking and speaking with people, I just want to know about you. Here's the thing. If you ask questions and you get to know the person that's on the other end of the conversation, they're going to be dying to know what you're all about eventually. That's literally it. You don't have to have some kind of hidden agenda. You don't need to have Jedi mind tricks to kind of get them on board with you. But here's the beauty of it. I've built so many great relationships until eventually someone's just like, you know, what is it that you do? And I typically, here's my generic response. Typically, I'm like, I'm an online entrepreneur. And they're like, oh, that's great. And usually they'll go off on, you know, a tangent, you know, somebody trading Bitcoin or they're, you know, they've got a blog, things like that. And then they suss out that answer. So social media is a great avenue. Meetups are awesome. I like those even better because you're able to get person to person. And there's the old fashioned method of just networking in general. So for instance, I know that we've already brought up Rob. Let's bring it right back in. Sorry, Rob, if you happen to be listening to this. Rob knows I'm always on the lookout to meet new people. He knows that I'm ambitious and I love to meet and learn about people. And that's what helps me elevate my game a little bit. And I'm going to learn something from you, Mark. Obviously, by doing my due diligence before we jumped on here, I went over onto your podcast over on iTunes, plug, and I listened to a few of those things and I was able to pick up little nuggets. And that's another way that networking can kind of pay off. So there's that way of marketing things. I could go the simple way out of saying we got Facebook ads, we've got Twitter ads, we got Instagram ads. Oh, we can even get influencers. But I always like to offer that solution that's for that beginner, something that is entry level. So anybody can do it. And those ones that I just listed are probably the most simple way of doing things. Because if you master that, all that other stuff is going to fall right into place. Because I could sit here and I could talk about running Amazon Marketing Service ads to your books till the cows come home with an ROI of 1,200%. But at the end of the day, I think one of the things that's going to build a longer term sustainable business is going to be out there building actual real relationships.
And I love this value on relationships. And this is one of the reasons why you could probably vouch for this also, but I enjoy hosting the Breakthrough Success podcast because you get to meet so many awesome people and build all these healthy relationships. And I'd love to get more into optimizing books to perform better on Amazon, but the relationships, I mean, with like you have people who will buy your book right away or leave reviews for your book right away. And that alone has a really big impact on Amazon to get those initial sales and get those initial reviews that you get through the relationships that you build. And yes, it helps if you have 100,000 email subscribers. Everyone will want those highly targeted. But the relationships we already have can really make a big difference if we're willing to nurture them and be willing to ask people, like, I came out with this book, would you be interested in buying it? Or even if you're doing a free promo, would you be interested in getting the free promotion when it's out? So I really love that focus on building relationships, but we do have to optimize a little bit as well. So how do we optimize our books to perform better on Amazon?
That is a great point. Let's cover four key areas, and it's probably going to be a fifth one I'm going to throw in there because you know me. I'm going to rabbit trail at this point, but I'm going to try to be as succinct as possible when it comes to optimizing your book. There are four very, very valuable areas. It's going to be your title and subtitle, all right? It's going to be your book cover. There's going to be your book description. And last but not least, I'm just going to make something up off the top of my head because that's what I do. Just kidding. Everybody's like, oh, they're shutting off your podcast right now. There's actually keyword slots, what I refer to as the keyword metadata, even though metadata is more all-encompassing of everything. But I'm just going to kind of just use keyword metadata, the seven slots that we have on something like a Kindle Direct Publishing platform or like 10 keyword slots that you get over on Smashwords. But we're just going to kind of focus on that background keywords that we can slide in there. Let me start it out with title and subtitle. And we're going to talk a little bit about keywords in general. Who is your audience? Identify who your audience is and how do they communicate? We're going to kind of talk about nonfiction. We're going to take fiction, kind of put it off the shelf, and we would double back around there. Sorry, fiction writers or those of you aspiring for that, you can kind of get the general sense. If I talk about nonfiction, what's the problem? And how do you have their solution, okay? What's their problem? How do you have their solution? Between these two parts right here, there's a bridge that we build, and it's with keywords, specific keywords. Let's not be confused, though. Many people think keyword is one word. Oh, no. A keyword is anywhere from two or more words strung together. My English is great. We string those together to what's called a long tail keyword. It's what is the way that your audience communicates. So let's just say my audience is office workers with low back pain. I'm just pulling this one out here, folks. Hey, what do you think they're going to be doing to find their solution? They're going to go to Amazon and they're going to put down how to relieve pain. Or pain relief for office workers, or office exercises for low back pain. I'm just throwing ones out here, folks. This is not high ticket items. Don't go out, start, you know, oh goodness, they're gonna start typing up their next book for office low back pain and use these keywords I'm pulling out of my head here. So folks, that may not be, you know, hold true. So you see the keywords is building between what is this person's pain point? What is their problem? And how do you have that solution? So now that we've got an understanding of the keywords, how do we incorporate those into our title and subtitle without seeming spammy? Because that's the problem. about a few years ago, it was okay to take keywords and just shoehorn them into your title and your subtitle. But nowadays, the reading audience and the buying audience, more importantly, is becoming a bit more discerning, and they're a lot more educated and aware of where the self-publishing business is coming in to all publications in general. I mean, the breakout success of things like 50 Shades of Grey and The Martian by Andy Weir, you know, you can see that self-publishing is starting to come to the forefront and people know what's going on. So you can imagine what the buying audience sees when they see this. Oh my goodness, look at this title. It looked like somebody threw up the alphabet into this. I mean, they just threw in 40 freaking words in there. Don't do that anymore. That's not a good long-term strategy, because eventually you're going to have to delist this thing and clean up the stinking title. But if you can put those keywords in a sensible order within your title or your subtitle or both, then that's the way to go. So for instance, when I was putting together, oh gosh, this was back 2015 maybe, so it's been a few years, when I put out the 90-day home workout plan, I had this clever title. And then I shoehorned all of the keywords into the subtitle. Well, I kind of threw it over towards some proofers, and I talked to a couple friends that I work out in the gym with, and I said, what'd you think? And they were just kind of like, eh. So I said to my best friend and former workout partner, I was like, if you were looking for my book, how would you look for it? And he goes, well, it's a workout, right? And I'm like, well, yeah. Like, how long is it going to last me? 90 days? Like, yeah. 90-day workout plan. What? That simple? He's like, yeah, that simple. And little did I know, just that little bit of asking what he would look for and how he find it, all of a sudden it opened up a treasure trove of ideas that ended up building this gigantic snowball that went out of control for me for this whole entire fitness brand. So that's where you're going to go ahead and try to work in the title and subtitle. So I know that that's kind of a general overview, and there's going to probably be a lot of people with some questions, but indulge me for just a second. We're going to move on to number two, which is the cover. Now, a lot of people are going to go, wait, how is that going to optimize things? Well, here's the deal. You can have this awesome title and subtitle, and you can have all the greatest keywords in the world, and you bring all the eyes into there, but if your book cover is bowling shoe ugly, no one's going to buy it. It ain't going to draw flies, much less be hung on your mom's fridge. So the thing is, you need to actually have a good polished book cover that represents the niche you're publishing in. So that's where you need to be a bit aware, and you have to do a little research ahead of time to see what that audience, once again, we knew how they communicated and how they try to find their things, but what are their expectations? What do they expect your book cover to kind of look like? Now, I'm not telling you to plagiarize or steal somebody's trademark style cover, but you're going to want to get that to where it's dialed in to their expectations. And you don't want to put it like, look, Mark, I've put out some atrocities. There was one point or another, I put out these covers for my fitness books that look like comic books. Dude, they were awesome. They were awesome. Everybody's, dude, that's awesome. You know how much it drew me? Drew me way less money than just putting a very simple fitness-related cover with basic text. Oh, go figure. I was crushed when my numbers went down, but the audience votes for what they like best. And you know how they vote? The wallets. And so I had to pull those comic book style covers, even though I dorked out and I enjoyed it myself. So know that book covers make a world of difference. I'm sure there's going to be some people like, but there's this one. This is a terrible cover, and it sells millions. And what about this one? Okay, listen, I understand some things are going to be subjective. And there's also just those ones that are just the unicorns. But don't consider yourself a unicorn until you are a unicorn. Because I'm telling you, the people that are the unicorns probably didn't even plan for any of that. These really ugly covers. You know, they put some lipstick on that pig, but for some reason they had themselves a smash hit. All right. So get yourself a good polished cover. I really highly recommend that you get a good graphic designer who specializes in book covers. Notice what I said there. Don't just get a graphic designer. You got to get a graphic designer who specializes in book covers, because I've used a graphic designer. God bless her heart. She's a sweetheart. She was great at anything but the book covers. I paid her nonetheless for working with me, but I was I used her cover probably about 30 days before I discovered that sales were plummeting with that one. So number three, book description. This is where you're going to have to identify your potential reading audience's pain points and how you provide that solution. Now, I cover this a lot more in some of my videos over on YouTube, so you can always go over there and check it out, but I'm just going to give you a general overview with the book description. This is where you need to work in organically some of your keywords into that description so it draws people in, because what happens is we're going to have the keywords inside our title, subtitle, inside those keyword slots, and now we're going to have them slipped into the book description to where it works in organically. Now, I'm not telling people to put in full lists of keywords. That's just garbage. That's hack stuff. People used to do that. Don't work anymore. Don't try it. It's not worth it. All right? Work it in organically. I learned some of this type of how to write ad copy at the same time honoring the keywords that you want to bring your audience in through Dan Brock, the Deadbeat Affiliate. Highly recommend. If you haven't had him on the show, get a hold of Dan Brock. He's your man. But either way, Dan Brock, you know, showed those type of ways where you could work it in and it made sense. How do you find those keywords? It's just going to be a simple thing of just going through and researching the market over on Amazon. Or if you're publishing elsewhere, you're going to, you know, for instance, if you're going to plan on publishing over on iBooks, go take a look at Apple. You're going to want to take a look over in Barnes and Noble. But either way, we're going to work those into the description. And what ends up happening is, let's just go to Amazon, for instance. It's going to tell the Amazon search engine, this is what I specialize in, this, 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 and this. And if we say it enough times and enough people vote with their pocketbook, it starts to bring a little bit of that confidence and push it right behind you to where Amazon's going to pull you up into their search engine and they're going to put you in first page placement, which, by the way, that's where it all happens, baby. That's where it all happens. If you get that first page placement, first slot, and you start selling, oh yeah, that's going to pay your bills. And I'm not just talking like 40 books. I'm talking one solid book. If you could get that first page placement in that first slot and get people paying, it's done. That's it. You know, go ahead, sip your pina colada, kick back and collect your paycheck. I wish it was that simple, but, and then last but not least is the metadata. As I mentioned to you, the background stuff that the customers don't see. The only people who are going to see it is going to be the people you're publishing through, be it Amazon Kindle Direct Publishing, be it CreateSpace, be it any number of them. Those are going to be a way that it sells your distributor that this is where I want to be categorized. This is what I want to be known as. And there's no magical trick. A lot of people think that, oh, if I just go ahead and I just squeeze in all these words, it's going to make sense of this alphabet soup. Nah. No, it doesn't work that way. If I were to ever recommend anything to anybody is look into something that's called keyword stemming, okay? Study it. Keyword stemming works for most all search engines. And if you can figure out a good root keyword and build off that keyword according to what your niche is based on, you're going to bring that audience to you. And after that, it's just based on, first of all, hey, you know, you got a good book cover? Are you answering their pain points? Do you got a good price point? I told you I'd hit a fifth one. And from there, it's really just, it's up to you. That's where you got to get out there and really market and building that relationship. Because I'm telling you, I probably wouldn't have had as many sales as I've had I not communicated with people and built those relationships. Because I'll tell you, I ain't the best ad copy person out in the world. And you can tell that I don't have the best English. But by gosh, my wife and I are able to live a life by our design. And that's all thanks to self-publishing and being able to know how to work this in a way that can sustain our life here.
Dale, we went really deep into that. I felt like I was listening to a training course. Like there is so much in that on optimizing. I mean, there are so many parts and I feel like I just have to listen to literally this one answer over and over again to get the full grasp for taking all my books to the next level and eventually getting to that page one first result of Amazon, the dream of all self-published authors. And I mean, again, like you've written over 40 books and marketed them as well. That's a lot of work on your end. And some people like they're just trying to write book number one or they're like book number two. And the reason they're not being able to do that yet is they haven't tapped into their full potential yet. Some of them feel stuck. So Dale, what are your thoughts on what holds most people back from reaching their full potential?
It is, I'm going to do a callback here, and it goes back to the someday philosophy. Not everybody's going to be guilty of this. Sometimes it's just a case of the job gets in the way. Maybe you lack the courage, but I find most instances people will say someday. And I can't tell you how many great viewers and subscribers I have through YouTube and some of the people that have gone through my website and contacted me via email. And what's holding them back sometimes, they say, well, someday. This is a philosophy I've learned, and I learned it from my good buddy, Kevin S. Allen. Kevin's a great guy. He is a hustler to the bone, and he runs a great credit card processing business. And he always tells me it's boring, but nonetheless, one of the things that he always shows me is he'd rather be a bull in a china shop. He'd rather make a ton of mistakes than not to make any mistakes at all. Because here's the deal, people, if you're making mistakes, that means you're doing something. So remember this little philosophy. If you're saying someday I'm going to do it, where does someday fall into the 7 days of the week? Huh? I don't see it anywhere between Sunday and Saturday. All right. It's not listed anywhere in the weekday. Someday does not come. Point to that day of the week, Monday, I am going to write my first book, or I'm going to start writing my first book, and I'm going to start doing this. Done is better than perfect. Remind yourself that. All you perfectionists out there, done is better than perfect. And it wasn't probably until the last couple of years that I was talking with my buddy Kevin, and I watched some of these things that he used to do. I used to be a perfectionist. I had to make everything perfect. But then when I saw this guy just, like, literally, he didn't care sometimes. But the thing is, he was making progress, and he was able to, oh, okay, I messed up there. I can go ahead and fix this. Okay, well, I could do it better this way. Done's better than perfect. Be a bull in a china shop. Make mistakes, because if you make enough mistakes, you're going to get a ton of awesome victories that are going to get you across the line.
And I've heard someday a lot, like people say it when I ask what holds people back, people say, oh, it's someday. But I mean, thinking of it the way you described it, there is no eighth day of the week on the calendar that gets that someday status. So definitely, no. Seven. I mean,
if somebody can get me the calendar with someday on it, man, I'm going to be hooked up, because there's a lot of somedays that I still have in my vocabulary. Sorry, folks. I have one finger pointed forward and three pointed back at me.
Yeah, I mean, that is one finger. Yeah, that's like, I've known that. I've like three fingers point back at you, but I don't feel like it's something people think about until they like hear, like, oh, I do have three fingers pointing back at me. But yeah, I mean, that someday is something that we come up with a lot. And you just got to set a day to do it. Just as Dale said, you got to pick, whether it's Monday, Tuesday, just pick a someday that shows up on the calendar. And one of the reasons that I feel like people will hold off on their goals is because they know it's a challenge. Like writing a book, marketing a book, it's fun at times, but it's a challenge. I mean, I don't know the quote. I think Stephen Pressfield said it, but like the book's like, it starts as like a princess, and then it like, so it ends up as a tyrant, and you got to slay the dragon. So it goes from like princess that you like really admire, or prince, and then you got to slay the dragon. It takes like all these, like, it's like five different stages, and you end up having to slay it just like to get it out there. So I don't remember the quote offhand, but it does illustrate that it is a challenge. And I know, Dale, you've experienced some challenges along your journey as well. So I'm wondering if you could share one big challenge you faced in your journey and a powerful lesson you learned during that challenge.
Well, let's see here. Gosh, there's been so many challenges. It's hard to kind of isolate any one of those things. I think that sometimes I allow my ego to get in the way. There are times where I want to accomplish more. So I'm a very vocal person, as you can kind of tell. I'm sure your listeners are starting to get a good idea of that. And sometimes when I say things, I will say it out loud. So we'll just say, I'm going to publish 100 books this year. And some people are like, ooh! And you know darn well, it's my ego sitting in the back of me kind of going, yeah, wait for that surprise face that everybody's going to give you. Yeah, this is awesome. But then when I actually sit down to etch out the time to do that work, all of a sudden I'm going, oh my gosh, I just said 100 books in the next year. That was stupid of me to say. And then I just kind of shoot myself in the foot and I don't even start in the first place. If I were to point into any one specific instance, and this is kind of a little bit off, this is just kind of popped in my head. One big mistake I made was early on in this business, I was looking for quick wins. I was looking for those victories because I was inspired by those interviews where people were like, I made $20,000 in my first 30 days in the business. And I'm like, wow. And so I would listen to some of these tactics and I would try to find these loopholes. And here's the deal. I haven't been just burnt once. I was burnt a couple times. And one of them in particular was what's a process called review swapping. Now, for those of you that aren't familiar with review swapping, essentially works like this. I am a publisher. I'm an author. There's another publisher and an author. We need reviews because reviews are social proof and it kind of helps with the discoverability as well as coaxing a customer to buy. Because if they see some great reviews on it, no, it's got so many stars, they're going to be more susceptible to part ways with their money. Okay? There's another conversation for another day with you and I. And so it's a quid pro quo system. The belief and the honest belief behind it is a person's supposed to read that book and then review that book. Now, silly me, I went ahead and I was like, let's go ahead and get a bunch of books. So I went ahead and I was reading a ton of books. Some books, I wouldn't be caught dead reading half the time, but I just really wanted to get this business so bad and I wanted reviews on my books so terribly. And what ended up happening is I started attracting in the wrong people. I was bringing in these foreign virtual assistants who had barely had a grasp of the English language. They were putting on these nonsensical like reviews. And I tried to get hold of them like, hey, you might want to put this through like a grammar checker because I don't think this means anything. Along the lines, let's see here. This was somewhere in 2015, so it's been a couple years, about a few years ago. There was a big crackdown on Amazon, and they started to flag accounts that they saw that were doing these quid pro quo systems because it's against terms of service. And I knew it was, and I knew I was playing with fire, but I was told, and I learned from other people, you know, hey, you want to make $90,000 in the next 5 days? I'm kind of like, oh, well, review swapping, they said it's got to be good. It's all right. It's a little bit gray hat, but whatever. Listen, Amazon doesn't like it. They didn't like it then. So they reviews started disappearing from my books. And then I start getting my stomach starts sinking because I'm like, oh man, I spent all this time doing all these reading these books I'd never want to read, and I put these awesome reviews out. Heck, I even had like a 44,000 rank in the top reviewers, which, you know, hey, that's not much, but nonetheless, that tells you I reviewed a lot of products, even outside of books. Then my reviews started disappearing. And I go, I freaked out. I get a hold of Amazon. I was like, hey, there must be some mistake. I've been putting some reviews up and they're gone. Didn't hear anything initially back. I tried another one. And after I'd sent that email is where it says you cannot leave a review because of violation of Amazon's community guidelines. And I go, oh gosh, they get a hold of me. And let me just go ahead and just paraphrase this. They pretty much said, ha ha, we caught you. And if you wish to further pursue this, we will terminate your account. And I'm going, oh my gosh, they literally revoked all of my review privileges. That means reviews that I did of supplements, gone. You know, fitness equipment that I reviewed, gone. All of the reviews I ever did, whitewashed, literally gone. In fact, about half a year ago to about a year, I was at least allowed to comment on reviews, which was pretty sweet. And then they were like, yeah, we're going to take that away from you too. So this is a residual effect. Now, some people can probably go, you can go and just open up another account, you big ding dong. No. Know when you're in over your head. Don't try to sit here and try to make up the difference. And, you know, I made a mistake. And now I have to live with that mistake. But thankfully, because of me making that egregious error, I'm able to express this to people that have been coached in that same philosophy and tell them, no, 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 no. This is a path of destruction. Please avoid it at all costs. So that was one very big mistake. And it's something I've even shared in some of my videos. I say, hey, review swapping, don't do it. There are legitimate ways that you can get reviews that doesn't require a quid pro quo.
Dale, thank you for sharing with us that big challenge. And it's interesting how, like, in marketing, there are those like make $20,000 in a week type of scenarios, but you got to be careful about what they're saying. I mean, some of them are legit, but at the same time, a lot of those are based on like having an audience and having relationships and then promoting like an expensive training course or a book or a coaching program. So you just got to be careful about those types of things. And I mean, I'm still amazed about how you've written over 40 books. I feel like someday I aspire to write that many books myself, and maybe even 100 books in my lifetime. But with all these books you've written, I'm sure you've had to read a lot of books too. What are three great books that you believe would have a positive impact on us?
Ooh, man. Let's see here. If I were to just stick to the self-publishing niche, I've read quite a few of them. I'm knee deep right now in Write, Publish, Repeat. I believe it's by Johnny B. Truant and Sean Platt. That was recommended to me by Johnny Andrews of Author Platform Rocket. And I love it already. It's fantastic. It kind of speaks a little bit closer to like the fiction writer more than the nonfiction writer, but nonetheless, you'll be able to learn a little bit from that. So I'm already partway in, love it. I can already start to endorse and get behind it. The other one would probably be The Secrets of the Six-Figure Author by Tom Corson Knowles. He really breaks it down to the nth degree so people can kind of understand how to build a good profitable business. Don't think though that by reading Tom's book, you're going to make six figures suddenly. It just doesn't work that way. But it's a wonderful read. I've read it actually a couple times, and I've even gifted it out to quite a few people. And then the third book, ooh, man, this one's a toughie because I've read a lot of books on self-publishing. Let me throw one off self-publishing, and I'll give you one that's just completely off the path. And it was one that inspired me for so many years. It was actually Mick Foley's book, Have a Nice Day, The Tale of Blood and Sweat Socks. It's written by the most unlikely of people, a former WWF champion, a guy that was in hardcore death matches, but the guy is incredibly cerebral and he paints such a great picture, and it's an autobiography, but you wouldn't know it by how outlandish some of the stories are and how well he crafts his storytelling ability. You know, everything from the first page down to the end. I read that book probably, I would say easily three times in my lifetime, and it's thick. But that one's a good one. And it's very inspiring because let me go ahead and summarize it. Spoiler alert, folks. Okay. It has an inspirational message, and it teaches you about the value of chasing your dreams, no matter what expense, never give up. And that's what I love about Mick Foley's book. It's one of those ones where you're like, you get a little choked up at the end. You know, you're sad that the journey's over at the very end of that, which by the way, he wrote like 20 other books, I think. But that's probably by far one of my most favorite books. It has nothing to do with self-publishing. Just got to put that out.
Dale, thank you for those great book recommendations. Those books will be over at the show notes at markaberty.com/E128. And before we head to the end of this episode, I'm going to flip the tables a little bit before you end up interviewing me. So I've asked you several questions throughout our time together, but what do you believe is one question that we need to be asking ourselves more often?
Why am I doing this? That's simple. If you can really start to identify and pinpoint why, what's your purpose for doing something? And I mean, don't just be like, yeah, you know, let's look at YouTube. Somebody asked me, why are you doing it? I'm like, because I like to share information. And it was like, really? You know, you don't have to have videos to share information. And so if you can constantly ask yourself on specific things, why am I doing this? You'll start to understand what moves the needle in your entrepreneurial endeavors. If you really want to make a difference, that's great. You don't need to make a living to make a difference. But if you can get it to where you understand your purpose of why am I doing this, you're going to see the things that move the needle and the things that's just busy work.
Dale, thank you for giving us that really great question. Something we should ask ourselves as we continue to put in the work. Why am I doing this type of work? Because then we'll get an idea of what types of goals you're truly after and what you're trying to achieve within your lifetime. So I'm very grateful for you sharing that question and all of your great insights throughout our time together. I mean, this was like a mini training course on growing your self-publishing brand. And speaking of training courses, which consists of a lot of videos, if you guys want to learn more about Dale and learn about how you can take your self-publishing to the next level, then check out his YouTube channel. We didn't mention the link earlier because it would give away because his name is in there, but go to youtube.com/self-publishing with Dale Roberts. A lot of great videos there, a lot of interviews. We're about to go on an interview right now, literally after this episode. So what the roles will be reversed, host and Mike. That video and many others are available on his channel, again, over at youtube.com/self-publishing with Dale Roberts. Dale, I cannot thank you enough for being a great guest on the show. Thank you for sharing your insights with us today.
Hey, thank you. I really appreciate your time, attention, and energy. And once again, a big call to action, everybody. Come on, give this boy some ratings, man. He's working his tail off.
How does over 100 retweets per day sound to you? My free ebook, 27 Ways to Get More Retweets on Twitter, has you covered. I use the methods within this ebook to get over 10,000 retweets every single quarter. To learn more and get access to this free resource, visit markgoberti.com/retweets.